Welcome to the podcast, From Crisis to Connection. I'm Jeff Stewart, licensed marriage and family therapist, and I'll be bringing the professional perspective.
I'm Jody Stewart, unlicensed wife, mother, daughter, sister, friend, and neighbor, and I'll be bringing the regular, everyday perspective.
We are all about relationship recovery, and we'll tackle tough topics like infidelity, abuse, addiction, pornography, and betrayal trauma.
We also focus on helping you build stronger connections in your most important relationships. So thanks for joining us. We're glad you're here.
In today's episode, we are going to talk about narcissism. Now, could this be the most popular word of the last year or two? It seems like a lot of people are wondering if they're in a relationship with a narcissist, if they're narcissistic. It seems to be on everybody's minds, and it gets thrown around a lot, and frankly, it gets overused, and in some ways, it's kind of lost a lot of its meaning. And so we decided to bring on the host of the popular podcast, Waking Up to Narcissism, Tony Overbay, who has actually been a guest on the podcast, on our podcast a few times, and so it's great to have him back. Before we dive into introducing Tony and the topic, I want to let you know about a free resource you can download using the link in the show notes. This is a video course on healing from broken trust and betrayal. This course is for you if you've had trust broken in your relationship or if you're the person who broke the trust. There's also information and support for couples that are trying to heal together. This video course will give you lots of resources and support, and it's entirely free. And so just click on the link in the show notes and I'll send it to you right away. So this podcast episode features a conversation we had with Tony Overbay. Again, he's a licensed marriage and family therapist and a podcast host, and he's got a significant online presence. Again, two podcasts, The Virtual Couch and Waking Up to Narcissism. But in this episode, in this conversation, Tony shares a lot of insights into his own professional journey and also discussing his approach to therapy, which emphasizes the importance of understanding narcissism, emotional immaturity, and challenges they present in relationships. Tony also explains the concept of narcissism beyond the clinical diagnosis, like focusing on narcissistic traits and tendencies that many individuals exhibit to varying degrees. And he talks a lot about recognizing one's own narcissistic behaviors and how to work on emotional maturity. So he shares a lot of great resources. And in fact, this conversation was part of a time when we had our Connection Plus membership some time ago, and we had people call in live and ask questions during the episode. So you'll hear us introduce the format that way. It was a unique thing we were trying out, but I love the conversation so much that I thought I'd share it with this general audience. It's just so great to have Tony's insights and input on a topic around narcissism that seems to be on everyone's minds. So overall, I mean, this episode really offers a deep dive into the complexities of narcissism in personal relationships, and there's a lot of valuable insights and practical advice for all of us as we're seeking to navigate these challenges with more empathy and understanding, and hopefully creating some personal growth for us in the process. So let's dive into our discussion with Tony Overbay. Yeah, welcome everyone, and we're excited to be here today trying this new format here with Jody and myself and our good friend, Tony Overbay. And so I'll introduce him in just a second, but just want you to know that this is live. He's really on here, and you guys can ask questions in the chat, the question and answer as always. And we'll probably just talk to Tony for a little bit and then take questions at the end. Yeah. So just put him in there and hang tight. We'll come back to him and we'll make it as interactive as we can.
Yeah, it's a good plan.
But first of all, welcome, Tony.
Hey, I was so pumped to hear this was live because this is something I've always wanted to do. So let's have you work out all the bugs, right? that works. That, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. We got started a couple minutes late, but not too many bugs. So I'm just glad everything was working. So yeah. You never know. Stuff will betray you really quickly. All these different connections. So let me just tell you guys a little bit about Tony. I feel like Tony and I are like two peas in a pod. As we've worked together over the years, he's been on my podcast. I've been on his. We realize that in some ways we're like brothers from a different mother, man. We do a lot of the same work and have a lot of the same passions, and it's just fun to connect with you always, Tony. So he's a licensed marriage and family therapist and a certified mindful habit coach, and does a lot of motivational speaking and writing and builds online programs. And he has two podcasts, The Virtual Couch, which you may have heard of. It's pretty popular. A lot of people love that one. And then a newer one that you've had out for what, a couple of years now?
Yeah, I think it's, I just actually hit publish this morning on episode 75 and it's weekly. So I can't do math, a year and some more.
Year and a few. Yeah, that's awesome, man. It's called Waking Up to Narcissism. And so those are some great resources. And yeah, and I'm sure Tony will share a little bit more about himself as you go along, but just really thrilled to have you here and to join us on this topic of narcissism, which seems to be on everybody's mind.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Right.
Very narcissistic that we all are talking about. Exactly right. I have to tell your listeners, by the way, what was really nice was that I got to listen and watch you guys dealing with the conflict of technology, and you were so kind and nice to each other. That would have been funny if behind the scenes you were just, you know, getting all angry and then the cameras are on. So well done.
Oh, okay.
As this marriage therapist, right?
Okay.
We passed the test. We didn't know we were being watched.
Yes, you were. Absolutely.
Well, today's a good day. We'll take it.
Okay.
We'll take it. Awesome, man. Well, anything else you want to say to introduce yourself, Tony, before we dive into our topic today for our listeners?
And Jeff, you can stop me at any moment if I get off on too big of a tangent. And first of all, I have a third and a fourth podcast that are out. I have a Waking Up to Narcissism premium Q&A episode that it's $5 a month. It's an Apple subscription episode that's there to then fund a nonprofit that I've created to help women that are in relationships with narcissistic, you know, fill in the blank, like whether it's a spouse, a parent, and I don't know, a boss or whatever that's like. So I want to be able to help people with counseling, legal expenses, and that sort of thing. So I'm the world's worst promoter, but that's a premium Q&A. So I just answer questions, a lot of questions on that podcast. So that one's Waking Up the Narcissism premium Q&A. And then 4 weeks ago, I released one called Murder on the Couch. And this has been a blast. So I have a daughter that's a true crime fanatic.
Oh, okay.
And so then we've just talked about this forever. And we have 3 episodes out where she presents a case. And then I know nothing about it. And then I just riff from a therapist angle. And it has been so fun. So we have 3 episodes of that out.
Sounds awesome.
It's my favorite. It really is.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
She's fun. She's feisty. I've had to click the explicit box for the first time in my podcast career. Because she's a firecracker, but it's been real fun. So we covered the Tarasoff case, you know, even the duty to warn that the therapist that we have to talk about.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And then a couple of others as well. It's been fun. So that's
oh my gosh.
Make sure we get released all that.
Seriously. Yeah. We'll check that out.
Yeah. We love true crime. Mm-hmm. Our daughter thinks that we're going to murder her.
I think, so okay. If you do,
like, well, Mom and Dad, you guys.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
You get exclusive rights.
Thank you very much.
Our daughter's like, wow, another true crime show, Mom and Dad. How interesting. Yeah. Seems to be a lot of that going on. It's pretty popular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We love it.
Well, awesome. Yeah. Thanks and if you want, why don't you shoot me an email or have Naomi send me an email with the links to direct links, all this stuff, and we'll put it in the community so people can access that stuff. We love what you're doing and want to support you. So
That'd be good. And I guess just the only other little bit of the intro that I love sharing is that I did computer software for a decade before I went back to school to be a therapist. And so this is a second career, but I'm a very old man. So I've been doing it almost 20 years now. But I love talking about that because that was definitely when I was doing the computer. And this will come into the whole what we'll talk about today with narcissism. But boy, talk about I didn't know what I didn't know. And so when I was working in a whole career field that I didn't like, I don't know, I was very emotionally immature or insecure. And I had to kind of puff up that ego to make myself look like I knew what I was talking about without even knowing that I was a lot of times just way in over my head. And then finding this career, and I love just everything about it. Then, you know, you start to learn to be very confident in the things you do know, which comes with also I absolutely admit the things I don't know. And that can slowly start to build, you know, trust and those kind of things too. So I love that I had a previous career and then this was going to just be a part-time career, but then I just fell in love with it. And then it's been the best thing I could ever do, changing careers. Yeah.
That's so wild. I mean, I knew that about you, but it's just so funny. Like knowing you, I'm like, I can't imagine you doing anything else.
Hmm. Oh. Yeah, I was not very good at it. I'll tell you that. Yeah.
Well, good thing. I'm glad you ended up here. Oh, that's awesome. So yeah, we're going to talk about narcissism today. Like I said, it's on everybody's minds. I must hear that word a million times a week in my office. Everybody's wondering. I even had somebody today, you know, ask me like, is my husband, you know, is he struggling with an addiction or is he just a narcissist? Mm-hmm. And I mean, it just is on people's minds. And I think a lot of words, you know, for a long time, everybody was, you know, the trauma seemed to be a big one. Everybody had trauma. Then there's ADHD. Everybody had ADHD. Huh. It seems like we kind of cycle through a lot of these, or everybody's borderline. There's just different kind of diagnoses or different mm-hmm. things that people kind of grab onto, yeah. kind of pop psychology. But I wanted to have a more in-depth discussion around this because, I mean, you have a whole podcast on it, two podcasts on it.
Yeah.
And
very narcissistic anyway. Of me. I couldn't even just have one. I had to have two,
seriously.
You know,
right? You got a case study right here.
Exactly.
So Tony, break it down. What are we talking about with narcissism? I mean, what, yeah. how would you define it?
So let me take you, I'll take you in the Wayback Machine. Let me take you on my train of thought. So I put the virtual couch out and one of the first guests I had was a lady named Tina Fuller, and she has a book called It's My Turn, and it's about her growing up with a narcissistic mom. And this was, I think it was episode 4 or something. And on the virtual couch, I'm at 370 something. It's 7 years old or something like that. And so I remember just feeling like, oh man, there's so much here that I'm dealing with clients and certain people in their family dynamics. And so that really put the concept around narcissism on, you know, kind of in the forefront of my mind. And then I do feel like I did what most people do, where now everyone's a narcissist, you know, and I'm noticing mm-hmm. that. And so yeah. then I start doing a couple of podcasts on the virtual couch early on about narcissism and narcissistic personality disorder and the various subtypes of narcissism. And then honestly, I start to recognize that, oh, I share a lot of these traits that are coming up in these articles. And so then I start referring to my own narcissistic traits and tendencies, and I'm kind of doing it just tongue in cheek. But I would also notice the download numbers for anything that I talked about that had to do with narcissism would be a few thousand downloads more. So then I start note. I just felt like it was this, you know, almost cognitive bias of this is what I'm looking for, then confirmation bias if I'm seeing it everywhere. But then I feel like even in my own relationship and myself, I start noticing the way that I'm being a little more emotionally reactive, or, you know, or if I remember doing an episode on gaslighting, and then there was a situation where my wife was saying, "Aren't you technically gaslighting me right now?" You know, and I was like, "Oh, I mean, yes, but, you know, by definition and that sort of thing." And so then I just start thinking, I really want to do a separate podcast about this. And so that Waking Up the Narcissism title even was very, I was very intentional about that. And so I talk about, you know, the waking up to the narcissism or narcissistic traits and tendencies in your relationship or even in yourself. And so I tried to talk about that early. And then around episode 8 or 9, and again, this was very intentional, I did an episode called Am I the Narcissist? And so that's where I laid out that narcissistic personality disorder itself is very small. I mean, it's, some argue it's anywhere from 2 to 4%, 5% of the population.
Right.
But then I went big on talking about, okay, there's narcissism, but then there's emotional immaturity. And I said, we're all emotionally immature until we're not. And that's where I start talking about, so I don't think we have the real tools to communicate effectively from the factory because we don't. And so, you know, that emotional maturity is now getting into a relationship with another human being. And now as we start to go through life and have experiences and we start to express that we have two different experiences, that's where the rubber meets the road. You know, now can I allow my spouse to have their own thoughts and opinions, or does that feel threatening to me? And so that's, you know, when I start going big with my four pillars of a connected conversation, my couples work, that it's really trying to help people now get the tools that they didn't have. And then to start determining, okay, are we just all emotionally immature in our relationship? Or is there, you know, is there more narcissistic traits or tendencies or even full-blown narcissism? And so then this framework of communication that I'm just preaching, my four pillars, I start realizing for just a couple of emotionally immature people that get together, then this is a framework to communicate. And now all of a sudden, oh my gosh, we didn't know what we didn't know. We have these new tools. Now we write off and we live happily ever after. But then I was starting to notice a certain percentage of the couples I'm working with, that just wasn't working because, you know, I'm presenting a framework and I'm saying, here's this tool. And then, you know, typically one of the people in the relationship would say, okay, but when you hear how bad my spouse is, you'll even throw away your own tools, you know, and then we can all gang up and get them. And then I start noticing, okay, there's a little something different there. And that's where I start really looking into this emotional immaturity or narcissistic traits and tendencies up to full-blown narcissism. And so then that's where, you know, that podcast has really been about waking up to our own emotional immaturity or yep. or narcissistic traits or tendencies or the, you know, those in my spouse. And then how do I show up different? You know, what do I do if that is the case? Yeah. So that's I know that's a long way to lay that out, yeah. but that's kind of the origin story of it.
Hmm.
Well, it's helpful to understand that there are levels.
Right.
Yeah.
That, and I think that's part of that's an important part of the conversation if we're going to have an understanding about it at all, is we're not just diagnosing everybody and it's not Absolutely. Just so clear cut that they're broken.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting too. and this might not be the exact direction we want to go, but I also pretty quickly back in the virtual couch days, I developed these rules of interacting with, at the time I said a narcissistic individual. But then now I kind of say in someone, if you're trying to show up differently in your relationship, that I've got these five things. I say the first one is you have to raise your emotional baseline, which is my version of self-care. You have to get yourself in a good place to be able to do the work that you're going to have to do. The second thing I say is to get your PhD in gaslighting. So start to really recognize that, okay, I'm not crazy. You know, I can express myself. And if the thing that I'm talking about gets turned back around on me, then, it's not a me issue. I mean, it's okay for me to express my opinion. And then this third thing I talk about is then, okay, so I need to get out of unproductive conversations because they're going to be crazy making. Set boundaries and then know that a boundary is basically a challenge to the emotionally immature or narcissist. But then the last thing that I think is so important is to know that there's nothing that I will ever say or do that will cause them to have the aha moment or the epiphany, that needs to come from them. And then that whole process allows somebody to be able to kind of step back and really kind of get their own bearings in the relationship and then see if that is going to drive change in the relationship or, is that going to cause the more emotionally immature or narcissistic person to even push more buttons to try to get, the person that's doing their work back into this enmeshment or codependent version of a relationship. So the more that I had people doing that, man, now I feel like I'm working everything backwards, Jody and Jeff. So even that alone was the premise of the podcast as well. The waking up to narcissism was, I feel like people will hear about narcissistic people and they'll say, is my husband a narcissist? Is my wife a narcissist? And then anything you kind of read about it basically says that, okay, hey, get out now. I mean, just cut your losses, right? Don't even finish reading this paragraph and go. Right. But then as a couples therapist, and I know you can identify with this, that no one is saying, oh, okay, well, I read these six traits. He's a narcissist. I'm gone. I mean, it's like, I don't know. Well, is he? Is he not? Am I? Because a lot of these sound like what I'm doing too. Mm-hmm. And so those five rules I was developing, I was saying, okay, here's at least a strategy for you to show up differently in your relationship. And I feel like that's where people would say, okay, so if I do those five things, then I'll be able to interact better with the narcissistic person, or then I'll be able to. But the reality is, if you do those things, it puts you in this place where you now have greater clarity of, okay, is this relationship something that I can, I don't know, that I can thrive in, or that my partner can step up? Do I now have the strength or the tools to be able to say, hey, I want something different in the relationship. I think we need to go to counseling or that sort of thing. And so that's really the people that I'm working with are really getting the information. They're hearing all about narcissism, and then they're trying to figure out, okay, am I the narcissist or are they? But in reality, I'm meanwhile trying to say, hey, how about you do these things for yourself? And that'll put you in a different position. And then here's a tool to interact with another human being. And now let's kind of go from there. So that's really been the kind of like the overall goal of the podcast.
Yeah. And I love that. And I agree that there's sort of this moment where we all shudder or get anxious about the fact that we might be in the presence of a real narcissist, and the thing is that, like you said, we're all egocentric. We all start off emotionally immature. Nobody starts off emotionally mature. That's just not a thing. Mm-hmm. Even if you come from a really healthy, intact family that, has great emotional regulation and communication skills, you still have to grow into that maturity. And all of that can change when you marry a person who's totally different than you.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you got to learn that with them in that dance, and then with your kids. And every relationship is an invitation to grow up emotionally.
Yeah. Right. Well, and so if we start getting into the, I could do the DSM criteria of narcissism, but I feel like that's talking about this grandiose, malignant narcissist. But if we really start looking at what emotional immaturity looks like and how we, I feel like we kind of all show up emotionally immature. There's an author named Eleanor Greenberg, and she has an article about narcissism. She has a lot of articles about narcissism, but I like that she's talking about narcissistic personality disorder, but she said that these are a series of strategies, coping strategies, that began as an adaptation to a childhood family situation that left the person with unstable self-esteem, the inability to regulate their self-esteem without external validation, and then lower empathy. And I feel like right there, we're talking about somebody that if they grow up and they didn't see somebody taking ownership, of the what they've done modeled, or if somebody just grew up and then they weren't even allowed to have their own feelings or thoughts or emotions. And this is even from a bless their heart parent that's like, saying stuff like, hey, don't worry about it, champ, or it's not a big deal, or, you probably played a role in that too, or it wasn't their fault or whatever, then we're kind of being told from our childhood that, our gauge of our own opinions and our emotional regulation is the wrong. So then we start not being very confident of how we show up in a relationship. And so now if we get in a relationship with somebody that is telling us how we're supposed to think, feel, or what to do, then we feel like, well, I don't want to upset them. So, you know, I want to keep the peace. And so then, you know, so that's where I feel like we can start to show up emotionally immature in relationships, because we don't have the tools to be able to express our needs or our desires or those sort of things, because we don't want to make anybody upset. And so I think that can be really hard.
Mm. Yeah, so true.
Well, I just want to make a comment about something you said earlier, which is that maybe the importance of having a hesitation to claiming that, you know, every emotionally immature episode is just a sign of a true narcissist. Because what you said was that all the answers are you need to finish reading this list of things and then go.
Right.
It's like the definitive response is to walk away, to cancel somebody, which actually is emotionally immature.
Yeah.
So it becomes a bit of a bind, because the interaction can be so taxing, so draining, so overwhelming, so confusing, but at the same time, it can be just as harmful. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's not fair to say, but I'm thinking just as harmful to just cut it off entirely.
Well, it's interesting, Jody. And go ahead, Jeff.
I was just saying, I think only if there's potential,
if you've got
two people that are willing to work on it, it's probably premature.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, there are some cases where it makes sense to have that distance, because, you know, gas, whatever, like there's abuse going on or whatever, but you're right. Like, I think in most cases, it's just immature people trying to figure things out. And we've been there.
Yeah.
And that's just how it is. Nobody escapes that.
Well, and that's the part where I love this conversation, this discussion, because if somebody is in a narcissistic or emotionally, you know, manipulative or abusive relationship, then they'll even hear what we're talking right now. And they're saying, man, you're giving this too much. You know, the person does need to get out, because it's going to drain the life out of them. And I think that's the hardest part about working in this area, with this population of people, is that it is this dance and it takes time and it's unfortunate. And then when people do finally, if it really was emotional abuse or narcissistic abuse, which can be, you know, again, it can be emotional abuse, it can be physical, verbal, financial, it can be spiritual, it can be sexual, it can be, you know, all kinds of, it can be coercion, all those things. And so then when somebody finally has a voice and they're able to express themselves, and then now they're being gaslit and they're being told that, you know, okay, you think I'm a horrible person or whatever the other person says to try to get that person back into that enmeshment, you know, then it does take a long time to get out of these relationships. And there's a book called The Human Magnet Syndrome by Ross Rosenberg, where he just talks about these are almost breakup resistant relationships, because you've got this, in essence, this pathologically kind human being who is saying, maybe it's me and I need to figure out a different way to express this, or I need to be the buffer, or I need to, you know, I need to show up different. And then if the other person does have more of this emotional immaturity or personality disorder, you know, they're just being in that moment, looking at every moment as an opportunity to kind of take this one up position. And then, so there is no consistency, you know, and that's why I talk about not trying to give your partner the aha moment or the epiphany, because when, you know, when something works one time and it doesn't work the next time and you're trying to explain that, you know, you're in essence like handing your buttons over to the narcissist saying, hey, here's the way to manipulate me and get me angry. And so it can just be real confusing.
Mm-hmm.
What was the name of that book again?
Human Magnet Syndrome. Yeah. And it really does form like this human magnet. And so it takes this pathologically kind person to be the one that eventually needs to break that magnet. And that can be really difficult, because here, this is this nice, kind person that's trying their best to make it work. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. There's a couple of concepts in narcissism, emotional maturity, and maybe you're familiar with these. I know that they're not just limited to this part of the field, but whole object relations, and then this object constancy. And so this whole object relations is the ability to see yourself and others in this stable or integrated way, where you can acknowledge both good and bad qualities in somebody. So, you know, nobody's perfect. And then the object constancy is then the ability to maintain a positive emotional connection with somebody, even when you're angry or hurt or frustrated or disappointed. And so that the author I mentioned earlier, Eleanor Greenberg, and I'll read this. She says, without the whole object relations and object constancy, people that experience, you know, that she's talking about full-blown narcissism, but I say people that are emotionally immature only see themselves and other people in one of two ways. So either they're special, unique, omnipotent, perfect, entitled, which she calls high status, or they are defective, worthless, you know, she says garbage, or low status. So the person struggling with this emotional immaturity, they can't hold on to their good opinion of somebody once that person lets them down, or, you know, you notice that person has a flaw. So the person goes from being special or put on this pedestal to then being valued as nothing special. And this is the part that gets so frustrating. So then the emotionally immature narcissist, then they seesaw back and forth between these two things. So when they feel good about you, or in other words, you make them feel good about themselves, then everything's great. I mean, they can be the nicest people in the world. But then if you do something that they don't like, which can be as simple as disagree or say no to one of their requests, or even just say, really, you know, now you're all bad and worthless. And that's the part where then the narcissist, to get rid of that discomfort, can just, you know, go completely blow up the conversation or the relationship, call somebody names, that sort of thing, you know, very much go to this all or nothing behavior, and then leave that pathologically kind person just feeling devastated. But then the emotionally mature person feels like, okay, they feel better because they got rid of that discomfort. And then 10 minutes later, they come in and say, hey, so what are we doing for dinner? And I call that the, hey, do you want to go ride bikes? Because it's like a little kid, you know, you just got in a fight with a little kid. And then 5 minutes later, you're ready to play again. And that's the part that, unfortunately, as adults, you know, you got this nice, kind person that's just being taken through the emotional ringer, trying to make sense of things, you know, trying to figure out what's wrong with them, trying to present something in a different way, trying to buffer for the kids, you know, seeing if they can really express themselves differently to their spouse so that they'll get it. And then if their spouse is feeling off and having a bad day, then they'll take it out on, you know, the kind spouse, and then they feel better. And then they're okay. Now we're ready to hang out again. I don't know what do you think of it?
Oh yeah. that's really a common pattern, I think.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because the people that oftentimes seek out counseling or seek out any kind of resources like this, or even probably listen to this, would probably be the person who's on the kind end of the spectrum,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, because they're feeling stuck. The
looking
other person
for resources,
doesn't feel stuck generally.
Right. Oh, they feel good.
They took care of it. Like they got out of it. They're either back in, you know, God, devil thinking. They're just in one of those. And it's like, I either think my partner's a loser.
Yep.
Justified in that, or things are great and they're amazing because my partner's not saying anything. So we're doing great.
So look at that. Yeah. Like that right there, then it shows you that person and their emotionally immature self is just using their spouse just for that validation, you know, and it's not really getting to know them or being curious or really understanding them. And that's where you see so often where the more emotionally mature narcissistic person will, you know, they don't know a lot about their spouse, or they, you know, they don't remember a lot of events or things, or, you know, and if you didn't remind them, then why didn't you? And it's your fault. And I mean that, and then you start getting into that world of that they don't take ownership or accountability for things. And that's that part that goes back to, you know, gaslighting is this childhood defense mechanism where if you weren't allowed to be wrong or make mistakes or have feelings as a kid, then you did anything to get rid of that. So, you know, as a kid, I didn't do it. The dog ate my homework. You know, you didn't tell me that, or that sort of thing. And so then we just grow up, and then that's the way that we show up as adults. So then any bit of discomfort, I didn't do it. I got to get rid of that discomfort right away. And then I feel better. And now we can interact. And it can just be so much for somebody else to interact with in a relationship, because there's just that lack of consistency or stability for that matter.
Right. And the treatment of that, I mean, and this is where a lot of people ask me questions like, well, why, you know, why are they lying so much? Or why do they just continue to, you know, minimize or deny or hide or sneak or whatever? And it's just like, it's all about inability to manage pain, right?
Yes.
Inability to manage someone's view of them. And that is, I mean, when you're so externally referenced like that, and you really kind of live life pretty afraid all the time, because everybody has the power to reduce you down to nothing.
Yeah. And so you have to make sure you're the one that's taking control of that, you know, and can't sit with any of that discomfort. Are you familiar with I just learned this one a little while ago, Jeff, so it's really not a setup, but it's a confabulation. Do you know that term?
You know what? I learned that word. I actually heard that word for the first time like a year ago.
Okay.
And I was like, that is an incredible word. Confabulation. Yeah.
I remember when you learned it. You shared it with us.
Yeah. I think I shared it at the dinner table.
Uh-huh. You did.
I wrote it home. I'm like, guys, kids, everybody, I learned a new word today. Yeah.
And it sounds amazing, right?
Yeah. Why don't you explain what it is?
Okay. So it's, and this is one of those, I feel like once you are aware of it, it's hard to unsee it. So in the world of narcissism or emotional immaturity, and this is, I took this and I wrote, this is funny, in my more emotionally immature days, I would have just told you, this is all me. But there's an article by this guy named Sam Vaknin, and it's called Disassociation and Confabulation in Narcissistic Disorders, which was in the scholarly journal. And then I took this and then I kind of, I don't know, put my own stuff in there around the emotionally immature. But it's so wild. He just said, that narcissists are, and then I add emotionally immature people, often dissociate or erase memories, and they're amnesiac because their contact with the world is through this fictitious construct. So narcissists and emotionally immature people don't experience reality directly. It's through this distorted lens. And this is this lens that was developed in childhood, again, where it can't have been them. They could not have taken ownership of things because that would be really, really scary. So then what happens is they have to eliminate any information that challenges their self-perception or this narrative that they've constructed about themselves. And so that is what is confabulation. So it's like an attempt to compensate for these gaps in memory, then they confabulate, meaning they invent plausible plugins and scenarios of how things might or could or should have happened. And so to outsiders, this is what starts to look like just continual lies. But to the narcissist or the emotionally immature person, you know, it can't have been that they did something wrong. It's because you didn't tell them, or it's because they didn't, you know, the other person right. did this thing. And the problem that's just crazy about this, and I'll read you this part because I think this is so wild. So yeah, they have to control the narrative in order to control the relationship. But this is why narcissists and emotionally immature people can contradict themselves. And I love this quote. He says, tomorrow's confabulation negates yesterday's. The narcissist and emotionally immature do not remember previous tales because they're not invested in the emotions and cognitions that are integral parts of real memory. So you can, the best place to watch confabulation occur is in any interrogation video. And for a while, if you pulled up my YouTube channel, it was nothing but, you know, in these interrogation videos, because the person, the cop who already knows that they've got all this evidence is laying things out. And then they say, okay, where were you on the night of the 5th? And if they're saying, okay, I was at the store. And they're like, well, we have video footage of you being in the neighborhood. Well, oh, the 5th. Yeah, no, I was totally in the neighborhood. Yeah, I thought you meant the 6th, you know, and they're doing it in real time. And you can like bring up a different thing for everything. And then that confabulation piece is happening in real time. So, I mean, and that's where gaslighting, again, is just, it's the air that they breathe. And so I had an, and I know I'm talking a million miles an hour, but this part is so fascinating because I think this will make sense too. So depending on the level of emotional immaturity or narcissism, that confabulation piece, again, is their reality. And so this is why you'll hear people say that, you know, maybe like a O.J. Simpson could take a polygraph and he's convinced he didn't do it. He couldn't have done those things, you know, that he did. But I once had a client that had done something, we'll just say it's nefarious in high school. And then I got to meet with them shortly after. And then he and his wife, and then they talked about it. Well, then fast forward about 15 years later, they come back into my office. And, you know, as a therapist, I'm a little curious about if things ever resolved about this situation. I bring it up, and then the wife is in tears saying, okay, you know, he doesn't even think this thing happened. And so then I talk to him one-on-one and he's like, what was she telling you? You know, and I know that this, you know, this thing that we had talked about 15 years ago was very real. And so then as I learned more about confabulation, because of where this person was in their life now, they had completely confabulated a narrative that had never happened, you know, what this thing was back in their high school years. So then it's as if, you know, somebody comes up and shows me a picture of me, you know, holding a baby in high school. And they say, hey, where's that kid that you guys had when you were in high school? Which we didn't have one, but then if all of a sudden I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about. As a matter of fact, I can't even believe that you Photoshopped that in there. And I am, you know, but the person, like, that's a reality. But then to somebody that has confabulated the narrative, there is zero chance that's real. And that's why that gaslighting can be done with just such veracity. It's like, no, you are insane. You know, that is not me. That didn't happen. To the point where then the person is starting to question their own reality of, hey, maybe it isn't what happened. So that's why I think that confabulation piece is so interesting. And unfortunately, it plays into, if you're trying to convince the narcissist or the really emotionally immature person that something happened, you know, that I think that's why this is so important to know, is that to them, you are crazy because it didn't happen that way. Right. And that's where I go back to that, you know, it's a waste of emotional calories to try to explain, you know, that, no, this is what you did, or this is what you, how you treated me, or this is what happened, you know, when somebody really is in that really emotionally immature narcissistic space.
Yeah. I mean, confabulation, right? It's basically either remembering or making something up at some point. And I don't know how conscious it is, or I'm sure they've studied it, but you're right. Like, to where the narrative, like your story has changed so much that you actually believe this new tale.
Yeah.
And it's so real to you that the other person's response to it almost makes them look crazy.
It does.
It is such a bizarre thing. And the thing is I've worked with both clinically and interpersonally with people that really have this. And it's like, you do question your own sanity.
Yeah.
And I just remember like years ago running into that interpersonally with someone. And mm-hmm. It took me a long time to untangle and really sort out And you probably thought I was crazy, or maybe not crazy, but you were just like, okay, like, believe this. I'm like, no, but it's so convincing. It's so convincing. Like, I just,
yes.
And it's like, I'm a smart person. I know my own reality. I know what I saw and heard. And when you're dealing with something like that, it's so I'd have a lot of compassion for someone who's across from someone who's confabulating like that, because
yeah.
It's weird, because it's more, I think it's more damaging in a way interpersonally, because someone who's like consciously lying, a lot of the times they'll just give up, or yep. They'll just like, you know, something will break or whatever.
And it's like, okay, fine. You're right. That kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you really have like edited your story so tightly that you actually believe this, it's really hard to break that.
It is. Well, and why I like this. I'm starting to get to the point where I'm probably over telling the story, but, and it's ironic because it's the person that's coming for my next appointment. So they'll come sometimes a couple of minutes late. Oh, they love this though. Cause I mean, I'm not going to break confidentiality. Of course, I'm a pro, but they'll show up a little bit late and they'll text me. They'll say I'm running 5 minutes late, and I will. And then if they get there 4 minutes late, then I'm hilarious. And I say, hey, you're early late. And if they're 6 minutes late, I say you're late, late. So this is true. And I even put that, we screenshotted this and I did a TikTok video of it, of all things, a few weeks ago. But the person says I'll be 5 minutes late. I say, okay, I'm sitting at my desk. They come in the door and I look and it's 6 minutes after. And I say, oh, you're late, late. And they said, no, I'm early, late. And then I broke all my four pillars and I told them they were wrong. And I said, oh, you said 5 minutes after. And then they said, no, I said 10 minutes after. And it was like, we did a quick draw with our phones and we look and it literally hit, the text said, I'll be a few minutes late. So we were both completely wrong. And it just shows like the mechanism of memory of where I had confabulated the narrative, because I'm so used to 5 minutes late. And this is what I say, that if you would have put me in on a polygraph, I would have passed. I mean, it would have said 5 minutes till I would have seen the text. But the difference is being able to sit with that discomfort of that, oh, I was wrong. And that's okay. And we laughed about it. And that's where I feel like the ability to self-confront and, you know, that's a big challenge. And when you're talking again on that spectrum of emotional immaturity to narcissism, if I can get somebody to really, I almost feel like admit that, okay, yeah, maybe I do handle things emotionally immature, and an emotionally immature way to get rid of discomfort, you know, is gaslighting, or it is, or we know as people that work with people that struggle with addiction, that it's, how do people get rid of discomfort? They turn to unhealthy coping mechanisms as well. So I feel like so much of this ends up being about, even if it's emotional immaturity on the and heading toward narcissism, is being able to sit with discomfort, sit with the fact that my spouse may be having a different experience, and I can sit with it. And then it turns out it isn't as scary as I think it is. You know, my parents aren't going to hit me, you know, if I turns out I did something wrong. Yeah.
That's the turning point right there.
Yep. Yep.
Like if people are wondering how to get out of this, it's like, or should I stay with this person? It's like, do they have the ability to self-reflect and sit with that distress?
Totally.
Do they have the ability to look at it and say, maybe there's another way to look at this. Maybe this isn't all about how you see me. Maybe there's other things going on. Like you can start to enter into somebody else's world. That's where I think it becomes safer, where you can work with somebody.
So that's like the shoe in the door.
I think so. Yeah. And I think you can work with that. Mm-hmm. I think it slows it down. But if it stays in this place of like you said, like fighting to the death, like, no, that's how I see it. No, this is my reality. Like I know. And, you know, and that's where it's hard to work with that. And anyway, I want to pause real quick and check in with our audience.
Oh yeah.
If any of you have questions for Tony, we've got him here. So type in your questions in the Q&A. I'll be looking for him and we'll make sure we put him in there. We want to make sure that you have a chance to interact with him. So on this whole thing, a lot of people, that's one of the biggest questions is, you know, how do I relate to someone who is emotionally immature, narcissistic, who's always makes it about them, who can't handle my reality. They don't make space for my feelings or my opinion. What do you say to them, Tony? What do you say to someone who's just like constantly up against this?
Yeah, it's so hard because there's even, I did an episode a few weeks ago on the antagonistic attachment styles of the narcissist, you know, and meaning an antagonist, this concept in biology that refers to a relationship where one organism benefits at the expense of the other. And then this, you know, this Julie Hall, who does narcissist family files, she laid it out so well. But I mean, even this is where you see so much where when people start to interact with the narcissist or the emotionally immature, that everything, it's like life is this zero sum game where there has to be a winner and a loser. So if I have an opinion, then that means you're telling me that my opinion, you know, the other person's opinion is wrong, that everything is this black, white, right or wrong. And so I feel like that can, I feel like this fine line, not even a fine line, but the balance is that I always tell people, you are, of course, absolutely allowed to have your own thoughts, opinions, and feelings. And that is, if those are being questioned or being told how you're supposed to think, feel, or do, then that is unhealthy and unsafe. And so then, so how does somebody show up? Is it if they're trying to have a conversation with somebody and the other person is literally telling them, okay, that's ridiculous, or I, you know, you shouldn't think that way, or why do you, you know, if they're attacking just the person's sense of self, or just the them just trying to have a conversation, then it's really tricky, because so often I feel like, okay, it's a waste of emotional calories to try to defend your own sense of self. I mean, we should just be able to have conversations with people with based out of curiosity. But then when people start to kind of wake up to this emotional immaturity or narcissism in their relationships, you know, they continually are already at this place of like, what's wrong with me? And when we go back to that, when people are saying, am I the narcissist? My go-to is that if you're even asking yourself that, you're not at all, because you're asking the question. So, you know, you're willing
right,
to.
There's the self-reflection. There's the totally. Self-awareness. There's the curiosity, or even the possibility opening up that you could be.
Yeah, absolutely. And then this right. is the where when I talk about the we know what we know and we don't know what we don't know. Man, that right there alone, it sounds so cliched, but I like talking about this concept of healthy ego versus this, you know, pathological defensive narcissism. And the healthy ego is really this realistic sense of this positive self-regard. And it's based off of your lived experiences and the things that you do. And so because it's based on real achievements, then your healthy ego it's impervious to these slights or setbacks that other people will, you know, if they're trying to tell you what you think or feel. Because that will cause you to think of yourself and do things that are in your self-interest. And it's right. about self-respect. But then, and that pathological defensive narcissism, and when I go back to when I was in the computer industry, I feel like this fit me to a T, where then that's this defense against feelings of inferiority. So then, you know, the narcissist dons a mask of arrogant superiority, because they have to convince everybody, I'm special. I know more than you do. You know, that's wrong. And so they'll go out and talk about things that they don't even know that they don't know anything about. And then, you know, it shows up to other people as this person is completely inconsistent, or they can't back up the things they say, or the things are very, you know, very surface level. But then that makes that person really hypersensitive to slights. And so, you know, they're easily wounded. They take like any kind of disagreement as criticism, and then they will shut down and then, you know, lash back out. So then I feel like if somebody's on this journey of figuring out who they are, then that is going to be coming from a place of healthy ego. So they do have their own thoughts and feelings, and that is okay. And then if somebody's, you know, pretending that they know everything or have an opinion about everything or need to put yours down, then that's that, you know, defensive narcissism or emotional immaturity. So I just, you know, my first response there is to get out of those unproductive conversations, because it's just a waste of emotional calories and effort to continue to try to prove yourself or defend your ego, you know, to the narcissist or the immature. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And is there, as you're exiting that conversation, is there an invitation in there without, you know, picking the one up or being like, you know, the teacher or the whatever, to invite some self-reflection, or do you just disengage?
No. Yeah, that's such a great question. You don't. And that's the part where, you know, any of that, and it's hard to not do that. And that's that when I say you can't be the reason they have the aha moment or the epiphany. That's really hard for the person that has been in that kind of a relationship to let go of.
Yeah.
Because they just feel like now that I've been listening to the podcast, now that I've gone to therapy,
this is, you know, the moment.
I can explain this, but then you hand that over to them and you're handing them more ammo, you know, oh, you think you're the expert now, or you think you're so smart. Well, you do this.
Or even, I think it's even like another layer, maybe not necessarily I can explain it, but I can respond in a way.
Yeah,
that,
totally.
That like elicits the self-reflection. In any variety, I can show up. I can stay in it, invested, and show up in a way that will instigate a change.
Jody, you just spoke so much truth there, because I feel like that's the one where the nice person it will do the thing like I'm going to take ownership for my stuff and I will model that for them. And then instead the person's like, well, it's about time. You know, yeah, you know.
And I'll stay in it longer because I'm more enlightened now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the narcissist will then use that like, well, remember last time you finally admitted that you were wrong? I mean, you know, well, this is another one of those situations where why can't you admit it? And it's where when you try to do that place from a place of vulnerability, you're showing them your buttons, and then they will, you know, use that against you. And there's so many cliches that are so true, where when I'm talking about, you know, even the person to get out of that discomfort, sometimes the emotionally immature will say, no, you're right. I was a horrible person. You know, they'll maybe go into that victim that mindset. And then to the kind spouse, they're saying, okay, that feels good. So the narcissist feels great to get out of the discomfort. And then the kind person feels good because he said, I get it. And I've been talking a lot lately about now is where we need to introduce positive tension. Well, What do you get? You know, and if they're like, look, I said I get it, you know, isn't that enough? And that can be really difficult. Because when you look at everything as a way to get rid of that pain or discomfort, you know, too often, and man, now you got me on all clichéville here, but I feel like, you know, Jeff is a couples therapist. How often do you get the people that come in and they're like, no, it's been an okay week. You know, we had some rough spots, but we worked it out. And then I'll say, how'd you work it out? And they're like, well, you know, we got through it. Well, what that means is we argued until somebody finally acquiesced. Then we went silent for a couple of days. When somebody poked their head out of the bunker and said, are we cool?
Yeah.
And they're like, ride bikes. Oh, we're good. Yeah. Let's go ride bikes. And now we feel good. And so then it's like discomfort done, you know, and then they're like, we're good. And I'm like, oh no, the absence of bad is not good. You know, we didn't learn anything from there. Nobody's self-confronted. We didn't have this connected conversation. And so, and I feel like so many couples get to that point. No, they hold it all in until they fight. And then, anyway, I could go on about that too.
Yeah.
So, you know, if theoretically the people who are going to be most interested in this podcast and in this topic are the nice people
absolutely.
Who are self-reflecting, is it worth maybe just having you identify your five pillars?
Yes. Yeah. It's funny. There's four pillars and the fifth pillar is like always up for debate. And sometimes people, you'll see where I'll
okay.
It's my jokes going on here, Jody. It's like, okay, but, and I appreciate you saying that because this is where it is a framework. And so so right. So I've got this private women's Facebook group. That's like 600-700 women now. And it's amazing. They are such a support for each other. And then sometimes I feel bad when they'll quote, well, I tried the Tony's four pillars, you know, but the reason I suggest these are it's nice to have a framework to even show that now the other person can't hold the framework. So my framework has always been pillar one is assuming good intentions that nobody wakes up in the morning and thinks, how can I hurt my spouse? Now I added a second layer to that pillar one with narcissism and emotional maturity, because when somebody is cursing you out, it's hard to go, oh, bless their heart. Like they have good intentions. You know, they didn't wake up and say, I can't wait to curse out my spouse. But I've added assuming good intentions, or there's a reason why somebody shows up the way they do, because if that's the only way that they felt seen or heard as a kid, or you know, they don't have tools of emotional regulation so that they are going to lash out, then that pillar one is okay. There's a reason why this person does what they do. Then my second pillar is you can't tell that person that they're wrong. You disagree, or, you know, that's ridiculous. But here's the key part. Even if you absolutely know that they're wrong and you do disagree and you feel like it's ridiculous, because any of these pillars, these are basically points where people jump off into the weeds and they just go into tit for tat, or, you know, fight or pursue withdrawal, freeze and flee.
Yeah.
So it's like, you can't say, nah, I didn't say that, or I didn't do that. Pillar three is questions before comments. So instead of, you know, if somebody adheres to pillar one, okay, this person's, they're saying things because they don't know how else to be heard, and I can't tell them that they're wrong. Pillar three is like, well, tell me more. Like, tell me why you feel that way. Especially the emotionally mature wants you to get in this, you know, argument so that you can go out into the weeds. So now that's where they thrive. Now they can take that one up position. Because if you stay in the conversation, it might lead to accountability, which is not the goal. So that pillar three, tell me more, you know, that sounds hard. And then pillar four is don't go into a victim mindset. So if I have somebody say, okay, I'm going to assume good intentions, you know, if they're telling me you're not even there for me, it's like, okay, well, I really feel like I am, but I'm not going to tell them they're wrong, even though I feel like they are. Pillar three, well, tell me what that looks like to you. Well, you just aren't. Okay, well, help me understand. Well, you're dumb. You know, it's like they can't stay in the framework. And then pillar four, if I say, okay, well, I guess I'm just a horrible person, you know, then I want them to come rescue me. So those are my pillars. But the unfortunate part is that, you know, when I put those podcasts out or I use that in my couples counseling, it's awesome. It's gold. It's manna from heaven, because now they, oh, okay, oh, man, I'm noticing I want to tell them they're wrong, or I want to say this before I ask questions. And then it gives a really nice framework for people to communicate. But when you're dealing with emotional immaturity, I think it helps that pathologically kind person say, okay, I am not crazy to say, that I'm not coming from a bad place. And when he's telling me, no, you're wrong, but I'm not, because this is my feelings and there's no curiosity. I'm just being told how I feel and what I think. And then if I even try to show up different, now he says, you know, okay, well, I guess I'm just a paycheck. And then I say, no, you're right. And so it just shows that, like, okay, here's a framework that we're not being able to adhere to. And so sometimes when people are trying to rule out the, is she or is he a narcissist or not, then I feel like the pillars or these five things I talk about, you know, or those are just ways to give somebody a semblance of a little bit of sanity to kind of say, okay, I'm having a hard time with these. And then my joke about it. So after those four pillars, I mean, I've had people say that the fifth pillar is like then intimacy or connection, or, you know, because if those things are all together, then But so I'm glad you asked me to go over those, because the unfortunate part is when then I have somebody that's hanging on for dear life to those, and then they're saying to the therapist or to the narcissist. Is that a Freudian slip?
I'm calling it.
But if they're saying, yeah, they're, I forgot even my train of thought there. Anyway, yes.
Well, they're all off ramps too, right? Every yes. one of those can be an off ramp for the person who's staying in this and trying to be self-reflective. And if they're just like, oh, well, I'm being told the whole time I'm wrong, or the other person doesn't yeah. care how, like, it's almost like, okay, then this conversation, like, we're out of the framework.
Yep.
It's a nice guide to say, like, you can off ramp here and exit it. And if the person comes back and wants to reengage in a more mature way, great. If not, then it's not going to go anywhere anyway.
It's not. And that's it, Jeff. I mean, that's where yeah, I feel like, you know, and unfortunately, I mean, it's unfortunate because, I mean, I got into this thing to help people and make marriages work and people to right. get the tools they didn't have. And, but then there's also a tremendous amount of growth in helping people recognize their own individual worth, and that relationships actually don't have to be as difficult as the ones that they're in. And that it is okay to have your own thoughts and opinions and feelings. And that's the stuff that breaks my heart of working with this population. And then unfortunately, one of the things that, especially in the group where we talk about a lot, is that when you start to, again, raise your baseline, PhD in gaslighting, get out of those unproductive conversations, set the boundaries, and then know you can't cause the aha moment. And you're trying to hold, you know, get to these four pillars, and you're aware of your own, oh, I'm wanting external validation, or I'm wanting to get rid of my discomfort. All of a sudden, I've got people that are doing tremendous work on themselves. And then they're just like, why can't my spouse, like, we could, this could be so good. And then unfortunately, when you're codependent and enmeshed, and now all of a sudden you're becoming differentiated and interdependent, it isn't like the other person thinks, oh, cool. You know, they actually push bigger buttons, and I'll yeah. tell this person, or I mean, sometimes people are threatening self-harm, and there are all kinds of things because they're looking for the button to get the pathologically kind person to react and get back into enmeshment. So there's like this whole process, I think, of all this waking up that then gets a person to the point where then at some point, I feel like they cross over, you know, their implicit memory or what it feels like to be them, which is based off all this slow residue of lived experience, suddenly becomes, I am okay, you know, and I do deserve to be happy. And now all of a sudden I do the whole bless their heart. They're trying the nuclear button, and it's not going to work anymore because I'm not going to go for that. And that's hard. That's a tough, but then right. people start to move to empowered at that point. And unfortunately that can take a little bit of time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And the thing is that I get that we all grow at different rates and whatever. And one person might have this maturity that kind of spikes up, and they're like getting healthier, more differentiated, and more clear on things. And there's an invitation there for the other person to self-reflect and do some of that work. And, you know, a lot of times we kind of leapfrog each other and work on yeah. that. And that's, a lot of marriages are like that. I mean, I don't know that both people grow exactly the same rate, but if you've got one person that's just, there's no reciprocity, there's nobody's, you know, you don't feel like there's any, you're dragging them, begging, threatening, whatever, that's not going to work. That's unhealthy.
And
there are worse things than divorce at that point, which yeah. is de-selfing, as Harriet Lerner says, or, mm-hmm. you know, you just start becoming diminished as a human being. And that's a problem.
That it really is. And that's stuff that, you know, haven't done this long enough. I still feel like, who am I to, you know, try to walk somebody through that?
Right.
You know, something like a divorce. But then at this point, especially in these narcissistic or emotionally immature relationships, yeah, it doesn't mean it's easy. But then when people get outside of that, and they feel like all that work they did that led them to that point, now they feel empowered, or they feel like they, you know, now they can find themselves, and they never knew they were carrying, you know, so many things you hear, this 50-pound weight on their back all the time, or they mm-hmm. were so worried about that they needed to stay or else the kids would be damaged. But then they get out, and, you know, I know we're out of time, but it's like, I can go forever about it. Kids get their sense of self from external validation. So if their sense of self is by watching one parent, you know, buffer for the other, then when you get them in two households, and if one of the parents is now feeling emotionally free and liberated, then when the kid is going there, then that what it feels like to be that kid is, I finally get to feel validated and heard and understood. And, yeah. you know, and then even if they go to a more emotionally mature parent now, they, you know, it's almost like they learn to have a surface relationship, because when that parent's being manipulative and making it all about them, then that doesn't feel, that's not what the kid likes. So then their sense of self, which version are they going to play off of more? It's the one where they feel like they feel heard and seen and understood, and not the one where they feel like, you know, I got to manage my parents' emotions.
Yeah. It works itself out. That's been my
experience. It does.
People and kids are pretty resilient and become pretty self-aware when they have that contrast. Tony, I know we need to pause here because mm-hmm. we hope your client is like on time, not late.
or early on time.
Early on
or
time.
Early late.
Early late. Yeah.
Hey, here's what's really funny. I swear to you, he did text and I thought he said I should be late and he said I should be there. Okay. That's okay. Funny.
Right on.
So maybe it's in the air. So
I love it. Hey, we should do this again. I mean, look at me volunteering. Yeah, but I feel like we didn't even touch on some of the stuff.
Oh my God.
I feel the same way.
There's so much more to talk about. So yes, we'll do it again. Okay.
Okay.
I know where to find you. We'll work it out.
Good. And then I want you guys to come and talk on my podcast now. That would be wonderful.
Oh, that would be really fun.
You're awesome. Thank you so much.
Okay, you guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right. We'll talk to you again. All right. Bye-bye.
We want to thank Tony for joining us on the podcast. I love his expertise. I love his energy. He's just such a great guy and does some amazing work in this field. And you can learn more about Tony and the great work that he's doing on his website, tonyoverbay.com. And you can follow him there and also check out his two podcasts that he does. And of course, if you want to download the free course that we offer on rebuilding trust, you can look at the link in the show notes and we'll send it to you right away. It's an incredible resource that you can get immediately to support you in your journey of healing from broken trust or rebuilding broken trust. Thanks for joining us every single week. We love hearing from you. Leave a review or a rating for us on the podcast. It helps other people find the podcast so they can get some life-changing information from these wonderful guests and discussions that we have. Have a great week, everyone, and we'll see you in the next episode.